Hey, folks, I know there are lots of business owners who listen to this show. Maybe some of you never planned on running a business, but now here you are. One thing you've always got to keep in mind is how much you're spending on your operating costs. That's one of the first things we had to keep in mind with WTF. And with things costing more today than they did when we started, you want to keep your expenses down. To reduce costs and headaches, be smart and use NetSuite by Oracle, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Reduce IT costs, cut the costs of maintaining multiple systems, improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/WTF for more. That's NetSuite, NetSuite.com/WTF.
Lock the gate!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fucksters? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. Today on the show, am I really going to do it? Am I just going to announce the guest right up front, right the way it's supposed to be done, professionally speaking? Fortune Feimster is on the show. You may have seen her in on the Mindy Project. Or on Chelsea Lately or Chelsea's other show. She's also a very popular stand-up. I see her at the store a lot, the Comedy Store, and I finally asked her the big question, will you do the podcast? And we had a nice chat. Doesn't always happen like that, and she just got engaged. So that's fresh on her mind. That's exciting. Some happiness, but... So that's happening. That Fortune Feimster will be on the show here with me in a few minutes. How's it going, folks? I don't know about you, but I'm having a hard time breathing. Is anybody else having a hard time breathing? Is it when these things happen, I don't know if it's, is it my mind? Is it anxiety? Is it stress? Is it emphysema? Is it cancer? Is it the end of the world? Why am I having a hard time breathing? And this is not a complaint. I'm not complaining. I'm not whining. I'm having a hard time breathing. I wake up and I'm like, am I drowning in my bed? What is happening? Yeah, I don't know what the smog levels are. I don't know what's still on fire, what isn't on fire, but the air has been shit out here in LA. And I guess that's not a lot to complain about, given that people are afraid to go outside on the East Coast because they might freeze before they get to their car. They literally may freeze in their footsteps before they get to the car. And I know, look, it's been cold before, but it's very interesting to me in these times where a lot of the time, all we can do is just search our minds for a precedent. Is there a precedent for this? Did somebody say it? Is it written somewhere? Is this the coldest it's ever been? Is this the hottest it's ever been? Is this the most fiery it's ever been? Is this the most? And the answer is yes. Yes, it's the most. Even if there was one other time, it's the most. All of it is coalescing. It's all happening and none of it is good. So what do you do? What do you do? A lot of times you gotta, you know, it seems like we can't wait it out. It seems like there's urgency at hand. But what do you do? How do we change things? I can't breathe. I can't breathe. See, after I say that, it all makes sense, doesn't it? But oddly, I'm feeling okay. I am about to engage in a big process, a big shift. Maybe I'm having some anxiety about that. There is actually no shortage of things I would, that I could be anxious about. See, now this is where I'm a little loopy, a little tired, a little stressed out, a little short of air, as I brought up earlier, and my brain doesn't seem to be working as much. My brain skidded twice on stage last night. Something about that main room on certain nights at the Comedy Store. There's just something about it. I don't know if it's an electrical force or a mystical force or just a strange quality to the air in there, but my brain just got stuck. It got hooked. It got skipped on a couple of words, and it fucked up the beats on a couple of my jokes. And it's happened in there before. It doesn't happen in other places. I can't figure it out. Is this a mystical event? That's always the question. How far are you going to let your brain drift? How far? So outside of being anxious all the time, I'm excited about these award shows coming up because I get to wear my new suit. I think I'm thrilled and humbled and excited to be nominated for a SAG Award and a Critics' Choice Award for my work on GLOW. Oh, by the way, I'm recording this before I watch the Golden Globes, so I'm not mentioning the Golden Globes. So there's that. So I don't know if Allison won or not, but I'm excited to wear my new suit, which I'm picking up on Monday. I'll take some pictures and I'll share them with you here in the garage. I'll share the pictures with you. I'm not really anticipating winning I'm not even thinking about that, to be honest with you. I am excited to get dressed up and go to a thing. That's what I'm excited about. Nomination, pretty good. Getting dressed up for a reason that I'm excited about with some new clothes, new shoes. That's exciting. And I'm excited to be living in a new house. I'm excited to have new space, to have room to move. And the thing that I was going to tell you about that's a little bit traumatic, or I think a little bit anxiety inducing, is I got to move this garage. I got to move it. I've decided I'm going to sell the cat ranch, sell the expansive 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom cat ranch. And I'm going to begin dismantling the garage and recreating it in the new place, probably in the next couple weeks. And I think that's causing me a little bit of, I may not know it right at the top of my soul, or it's not on the surface of my thoughts or my feelings, but it's going to be heavy, man. But part of me is excited. I'm just going to go through this place, book for book, piece of artifact for artifact, and decide what has power, what doesn't have power, what I want and what I don't want. I wish I could have a garage sale, but I don't think I can. It'd be a real, it would be the garage sale. But I don't know what I would be selling. So I'm probably just going to cart all this shit with me. But I'll give it to libraries. I'll give it to Goodwill. But yeah, it's going to be a big change, folks. But I would like to say that I am moving to another garage. It's literally another garage space. Yeah, I think it might be a little bigger. It's got a bathroom. But I got to take this one apart. I guess that's going to be a grieving process. That's going to be an emotional journey. But goddamn, I don't need a lot of these books. I'm telling you, I just don't need them. Yeah, so moving the garage. Wow, it's making me a little, I might get choked up. Maybe I should do a show as I go through stuff. Would that be interesting? I don't know. I'll be honest with you. Can I be honest with you? I had a photographer come over here and document the garage as it stands now. I don't know what I'm going to do with those pictures, but I thought it was important to have it. Maybe I should do some sort of video of the taking down the garage. It seems sad. It seems like a historical day. And I think that's why I'm hanging on to this. Like the house is pretty empty. But yeah, I think that part of it is just sort of like, I'm just not ready. I'm not ready. I'm emotionally not ready. Even though the new space is going to be great, just not emotionally ready. So Fortune Feimster is a killer, man. She's a great comic. She fucking slays, and I've seen it happen again and again. She'll be on the upcoming NBC show Champions, and she'll be at House of Comedy in Phoenix, Arizona this Friday and Saturday, January 12th and 13th. We talk a bit about generating new material. We're both in the same place. I got a few Europe dates I got to get some new shit together for. But it was great to talk to Fortune, and this is me doing just that. So what's going on? Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That's a big deal. You got engaged?
Yes. This 2 days ago.
You didn't know that was going to happen, or did you? Who did it? What happened? How'd it go?
I did it. I'm technically the butch one.
Yeah.
Though I'm not very butch. People were asking online, they're like, how does it work when there's two chicks? Who asked who? But I kind of always knew I would be the one to ask for some reason.
How long have you been together?
2.5 years.
That's good. That's the right amount of time for people to do it. People who aren't waiting.
Right. People were like, I'm scared.
Yeah, or buying time. Yeah. Maybe something better will come along.
Which, that was my experience with everyone I dated before her.
Oh, really?
Just constant, like, you'll do for now.
Right.
Like, them towards me. Oh, like, yeah, they'll be like, I'll date you until I find...
They were like that?
Yeah, they were like that.
Oh, what, heartbreak?
Quite a bit, but, you know, I mean, I never got super serious with anyone.
Right.
So it was like minor little heartbreak.
What's her name?
Her name's Jacqueline.
And what does she do?
She's a kindergarten teacher.
Ah.
So she's like a normal, she's a normal person.
Like noble profession.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like a real life important job, not like a weirdo show business job.
Oh, I know. And she, when I met her, she lived in Chicago.
How'd you meet her in Chicago?
At Gay Pride.
What were you doing at Pride in Chicago?
I have friends that run like events out there for Gay Pride. And uh-huh. They were just like, and my best friend who I lived with in LA for 7 years was living there.
Oh, okay.
And they were like, come hang out. Come hang out at Gay Pride. And we met there and kind of been together ever since. It was
2.5 years ago. So she was living in Chicago?
Yeah. And we were long distance for a year.
And then you were like, drop your life, come out.
Well, I mean, she had a very... noble job even in Chicago. She taught basically in the hood of Chicago and was an amazing teacher. Her kids
still
loved
kindergarten
her. Still kindergarten.
Yeah,
I would go to her school and, you know, she just was so good with these kids. They loved her. And
yeah,
these are kids who, you know, every kid in there had someone in jail
or
like
shot.
They'd seen crazy amount of things at 5 years old.
Ugh.
And would come to school, like, didn't even have a coat, you know, in Chicago.
Oh, my God.
And I'm all like, come to L.A.
Yeah. Enough of this good work.
Yeah. Stop being such a good person and come to L.A.
Relax.
Yeah.
So now...
So she's been in L.A. a year and a half.
She like it?
She does. I mean, she hasn't found that school yet that's like... Because she wants to... I was like, why don't you... work at like a charter school where the parents give you gift cards at Christmas. And she tried it and she's like, I miss, you know, my kids.
Yeah. Like, you must feel like you're making a difference, you know?
Yeah. And she really wants to make a difference. So she's subbing now looking for, you know, that school.
She'll find it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So how did it go? What was the... who decide like that? Well, that is an odd question, but like, who decides who's butch and who isn't? I mean, I guess sometimes it's a parent.
I mean, I guess I take out the trash more. Maybe that's what it is. I wear t-shirts a lot.
Right. But it's not a disposition thing necessarily.
Well, because if you were going by disposition, she'd be the butch one because she's a teacher. So she's got that like, sit down.
Yeah,
wash your hands.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, yes, ma'am. So I guess she's a little more butch in that way, but I just, I knew she wanted like a ring like that. Her dad's a jeweler.
Uh-huh.
So
did you call him? Did he know before she did?
Yeah, I did call him. I mean, she knew like, I wanted her to have some input. So we looked at a couple rings.
Oh, so it
together.
Wasn't a surprise.
No, it's hard when you live together to like surprise someone.
I guess so.
Just lazy.
Or they may not know when it's coming.
Yeah.
She didn't know the day it was going to happen, right?
No, I mean, not really. I mean, but also that's kind of hard too because you're like, hey, after Christmas, let's go on a vacation.
A little weird
for
trip.
Two days. Yeah. So I think she kind of knew it was coming. So we went up to, I really wanted to do it at a place called San Ysidro Ranch in Santa Barbara.
It's pretty, right?
Yeah, we had a date up there early on, and she's like, whoa, this is really romantic. Good thing we like each other.
Yeah.
Or this would be, you'd be trying a little too hard.
How did that, what do you mean? How did that work out? You went on one date?
I mean, it was like
an overnight date?
Like our first week of dating, I was like, I didn't know it was so romantic up there. Like, it was.
Was it a day trip or like?
It was an overnight trip. I was really.
The first week? You're like, let's do it.
I was really like ready to make this happen. And they closed down for a month because of all those fires.
Oh, yeah. Is it still on fire up there?
No, I don't think so. I don't know.
It's weird. We live in a state where it's like, oh, maybe it's still burning.
Everything's burning around everything's us.
Yeah, that's for sure.
We're just like doing a podcast.
Yeah, waiting. Yeah.
That's just, LA, though.
It is. It's like waiting for it all to go down. Yeah.
We're like, we've got to entertain. Yeah.
It's hard to know what to do. You know, when you feel powerless, you do have to just sort of just keep going.
Yeah. Like, we've got to talk to people out there.
Yeah. Make sure people know that, we're all freaking out, but we're still, you know, we got to live our lives and keep talking to each other.
Our house just went down a hill from a mudslide, but whatever. The garage is still here.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right. So when do you have wedding dates and stuff, or how's that?
No, we're like not your typical lesbians. They're usually in a rush to get everything. Right. Official and done. We're like maybe 2 years.
Oh, really? Know. Is that what typical lesbians do? Sort of like rings on, let's go.
A typical lesbian would have been engaged a year and a half ago and already married.
A year in.
We're not as typical. Mm-hmm. I was just like, we know we're committed. We're happy. We'll do it at some point down the road.
So how's that ring? Nice ring?
I'm pretty proud of it.
Yeah.
It's a little bigger than I would have like normally gotten,
whose input was that? Her dad?
I mean, well, her dad tried to help me out. He was like, you don't need to get a ring, I mean, a stone that big.
Right,
and
right.
She's just like really, like, it's jewelry. And I saw this. The problem was we went to go look at stones.
Yeah.
And I brought her mom and the mom's friend with us.
Right.
So they're showing us different stones. And they're like, oh, that's pretty. That's pretty. And then they bring out, you know,
the big one guns. At the end. Yeah, yeah.
Everyone in the room, oh, my God. Whoa, it's so pretty. Look at, oh, wow, wow, wow.
And you're looking at your wallet.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, man, how do you, like, backpedal from that one.
You can't.
So I ended up,
right, there were too many people involved.
Too many. That was my biggest mistake. I should have never gotten input.
No.
Ever.
Just do it on your own.
So that, you know.
So that's how she got the huge rock.
So she got the big rock.
Well, that's nice. And she loved it?
She loved it. And, you know, part of me getting her the bigger one, I knew she'd like it. And she did, you know, uproot her whole life for me. She, you know, had a job she loved. Chicago's a great city, and she loves LA, but it's different. It takes a while to adjust.
Oh, no, definitely. Yeah, yeah. Chicago, like, I've grown to really like Chicago.
Oh, it's a cool city.
It is, like, its own thing. Yeah. It's got its own vibe.
It's like a clean New York.
Yeah, it's got its own personality. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's good and bad, but it's, like, it's like one of those places that is a real place.
Yeah,
not
real
just
people.
Yeah, yeah. Like, mm-hmm. It has a history. You feel it. It's got its own personalities. No, there's only a few cities like that.
Yeah, it's good food there.
Oh, yeah.
Really not, because a lot of the Midwest people live there. And
sure.
They're good
sausages.
Folk.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a lot of, there's all that Ukrainian kind of food. Uh-huh. And there's, like, you know, a lot of meat. Chicago's big on the meat.
Oh, yeah. So
but
it's good.
What, so is Mindy Kaling really going to officiate?
We don't have any official plan.
Right, but so she's just saying.
She just we posted the picture and she wrote, yes, I will officiate.
Oh, okay.
And so I wrote back, yeah, for sure. And then I didn't even know that, like, any publication knew who I was, and all these publications were like, Mindy Kaling's gonna officiate.
Oh, really?
Fortune Feimster's wedding.
Well, now they know who you are.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, cool.
Yeah,
maybe we'll get a free Chili's gift card.
No, I think you could probably pull that off. I think you could probably pull that off with a couple of tweets.
Yeah,
if you really want to, like, a Chili's gift card.
I'm constantly tweeting them. They finally sent me a sweater at Christmas. It was a big, big moment.
Chili's?
In my life. Yeah.
What are you talking about?
I tweeted them that, like, I love them, and they sent me a Christmas sweater. That's the America we live in, people.
Chili's.
It's a beautiful
world. It's Chili's for you.
Yeah, I'm a simple Southern girl.
Yeah, well, do you like Cracker Barrel?
Yeah, I like Cracker Barrel. I mean, they're a little racist.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
I don't feel as good eating.
Right, but now
before I was woke.
Yeah, before you were woke.
No, I don't really say woke.
It's all right. But like in the South, like there's other things than chilies. You know, like
yeah.
I mean, like what happened to those mom and pop places?
There are not a lot of those left anymore. It's all the chain places.
Well, where'd you grow up?
I am from Belmont. It's a small town in North Carolina outside of Charlotte.
Oh, so it's close to the other Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Like right there.
Yeah, right on the
South and border. like what kind of is that? Well, Charlotte's pretty southern.
Yeah,
Charlotte's great. I mean, I've had good shows there, but it's not Raleigh.
Yeah, I love Raleigh. I went to college in Raleigh.
Yeah.
I mean, Charlotte's got the whole banking.
A lot of
thing.
Banks. Like, there's like a Ritz-Carlton. Yeah. Like, it's like this bank hub.
So it's got like a mix of a little more sophistication with Southern.
Well, at least money with Southern.
Yeah, money with Southern money.
Right, because there's that whole little world there that's like really high end.
Yeah.
And it's all because of the banks.
Yeah, and I mean, my town's literally 20 minutes from there.
Yeah.
And everyone in my town sounds like me, and their accent's thicker.
Yeah.
You go 20 minutes to Charlotte, and no one sounds like
Is
this.
It because they're all from out of town?
I guess. I think
I mean, so. I don't think you just wash away the accent. Yeah. It must be because, you know, people move there to work at the banks.
I'd assume so. I cannot get rid of my accent.
Have you tried?
No.
It's a nice accent. It's
good. It's
good.
Gotten better since I've been in L.A. 15 years, but I like watch videos from me in high school, and it's pretty painful.
Like, really?
I mean, it's like... it was kind of like this. It was even slower.
So you grew up your whole life there?
Yeah, until I was 22.
How many siblings?
Two older brothers.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
And what's your mom and dad do?
My mom was a school teacher, special ed.
Uh-huh.
And
for your whole life?
My whole life. Yeah, she's retired now. My dad had a lot of different jobs.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't never really find his passion, so he did a lot of different things. I think the longest job he had was he was a manager at a trucking company.
Oh, yeah?
And then he retired and then realized it's hard to pay bills being retired, so he went back to work at an elementary school. He's, in charge of the janitorial department.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Not the same school that your mom was at, no?
No.
Oh.
So they're, hardworking... Simple folk.
Southern
nice
American
people. Yeah.
Nice people.
Nice people.
And how'd your brothers turn out?
Good. No one's in jail.
No.
Which we're all very grateful for. One is in the, works for Homeland Security for the Coast Guard.
Uh-huh.
And the other one works at Winthrop University in their student services department.
And are they all excited about you being in show business?
Yeah, I mean, nothing really impresses them. They have kids and wives. They're just like, cool, cool.
Yeah.
We got to get,
right.
Rylan to soccer practice. All right.
But I'm on television.
Yeah. Guys, did you see it? They're like, well, they can't watch it
because
it's kind of dirty. So they haven't seen you on TV. You're like, cool.
I'm always I get kind of fascinated when people grow up in the South because I have this weird evolving relationship with the South.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I stopped generalizing it at some point. Mm-hmm. I was one of those people that just sort of, kind of lumped it all into, at least the people.
Yeah.
But then, as time went on, I realized, God, these people are nicer than most people.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's good and bad and, it gets a bad rap and it's beautiful down here and I like the food. And maybe I was just all wrong about the South. And then something happens. You're like, nope.
it's an interesting place. It's an interesting group of people. I love the South. Being from there, I understand the people a little bit more. You kind of I get, not everyone. There's a lot of very, everywhere, there's a lot of very smart, educated people who are very aware in the world and, are inclusive. And there are other people who just never quite left their bubble, which is any part of the country. You have people like that.
Yeah.
But they just kind of know what they know and don't want to look beyond that.
It can be quite a hostile bubble down.
Yeah. I was looking at that, that video went viral with the whole Roy Moore stuff. There was that Southern man who stood outside with a picture of his daughter.
Oh, yeah.
That she had committed suicide, and he said, he was there to fight Roy Moore because Roy called people like her, his daughter, a pervert.
And she was gay, right?
She's gay.
Yeah.
And, it sort of reminded me of my dad, just a simple guy who, he doesn't want to leave the South. He's content where he is. And if I wasn't gay, he would not know any gay person or think about it.
Right.
And, might have at one point thought it was weird.
Sure.
But because I'm gay, he's like, yeah, I like gay people. And it just reminded me of that guy, you know, like, where, you know, he's like, I was against her, but then I lost her and I realized, you know, I was wrong and gay people aren't perverts.
Right.
And it's as simple as that sometimes. You, not someone committing suicide, but just knowing a gay person.
Sure. I think that's true.
Part of it's just not having a gay person around,
right,
and not seeing that their lifestyle is not that different.
Sure, or else, you know, there's those people that lock into just, you know, hating the other exactly. type of person, or they're something in themselves.
Yeah,
you know,
some
like
fear. Yeah,
I mean, I can't, like, it's sort of, and I don't know if I'm wrong or if it's wrong for me to say, but I, you know, some of the pictures of some of those, you know, sort of white nationalists in those protests, I'm like, oh my God, they're so gay. They're just they look
oh for sure.
I mean, they just look so like you know, like, and I mean, and that, maybe that's wrong for me to say, but that was my instinct that
there
was an inner struggle going on.
Yeah, I mean, some of the biggest homophobes or people that just hate people in general have, you know, something inside of them that they hate themselves that they're just like, I'm gonna put all, you know, push this out so far onto other people.
Yeah,
no one can see it in me.
Right. I literally think that all Mike Pence thinks about is like, don't think about dick. Don't think about dick. No dick. Please, no. Don't think about dicks.
Oh, you just looked at a dick.
Oh, God damn it. it's just like his face. Yeah. I don't know. But
it's a face of a guy that wants dick and can't have it.
Just can't. Just will not allow it.
No. I mean, and that's... You know, it's a real thing. My mom dated for a minute somebody who, I don't know, I don't have a proof, but
right.
I allegedly think he could be a closeted homosexual.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and he didn't like gay people. And, you know, you're just like, somebody should tell you that there's something about you.
I guess, I've talked to people that, you know, that... You know, have just, you know, talked about coming out and struggling with certain things, but so I imagine that I don't, to some people it's just sort of like I can't. Did you, what was your experience?
I came out late. I was like 25 or 26 when I came out, which is I consider late these days, because now kids at 10 are like, I'm gay. You're like, what?
Give it a minute.
Gosh. At 10, I didn't know anything. I was just like, soccer.
Yeah.
I, you know, in hindsight, you look back, you're like, oh, I've been gay as soon as I was born. But being from the South and, again, not having examples of gay people, like, I didn't know any out gay people. There were people in my hometown who, you know, were in the closet but married.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, I think you might be gay, but you have a wife. I don't know. So I just only knew, like, being in the closet or being ashamed of it. So,
but you knew you were gay early on.
I think so, but I just kind of shoved it down.
Oh, really?
Just I didn't really even think about it.
Right.
And this was before YouTube. And
sure.
This was before, you know, Will and Grace. And those things do make a difference when you can watch a TV show and be like, oh, that's registers with me
it
somehow.
Exists.
So I just kind of didn't date. I just was sort of like asexual for a long time.
Wow.
I was studious. Made good grades
and soccer
of soccer, lots of like putting lotion on my friends' like arms, just arms, nothing perverted, just like, you look dry. And that was like my form of intimacy.
Well, that's nice.
A more innocent time back then.
Did you grow up with religion?
We were Methodists. Like, we went to church, but it was like, that's what you do in the South. But we weren't like raging Baptists.
Right.
We were just like...
It's weird. There are like churches every few blocks in the South.
Oh, it's like they're everywhere. And that's just a social part of life. You're like, we're going to go to church on Sunday.
And that's your community.
Go out to eat afterwards.
Right.
And you're like looking at the clock ready, you know, be like, he better let us out before the Presbyterians or we're not going to get to this steakhouse.
To Chili's?
Yeah, to Chili's. So, I mean, we had that, you know, church in our lives, but we weren't, you know, luckily my family is pretty liberal.
Yeah.
And I come from a long line of Democrats.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The old school Southern Democrats?
Yep.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah,
and
so,
they still are?
Still very, my mom's like a huge Democrat.
That's
like,
good.
She's like the only woman like was driving around with an Obama sticker on her car.
Oh, really? She get any flack for
oh,
that?
Oh, she got a lot of mean looks.
Uh-huh. She lose any friends
years.
Over it?
Oh, I'm sure. She'd be in the, they call it the beauty parlor.
Uh-huh.
And people would, you know.
The beauty
be
parlor.
Be like, he's a Muslim. And, yeah. and she'd be like, you shut your mouth. He is a good man. Yeah, so she was definitely like the lone wolf in that. That area.
It's intense, man. The South is a little intense. Yeah.
But my family was, when I finally did come out, I had moved to LA at that point, and it just, you know, after right. being here for a little while and seeing gay people, yeah. and seeing it's normal,
right?
It finally
happened.
Happened.
It came out.
It came. I was watching a Lifetime movie. I swear to God. I'm not a great person to be like, you know how some organization like TV will make you gay.
Yeah,
I'm not a good person to
deny that.
To deny it, because I watched a Lifetime movie, and it was a young girl was realized she was gay. She was in high school.
Yeah.
Like, The Truth About Jane, I think, is the movie. Stalker Channing was her mom,
uh-huh.
and obviously this had been bubbling up in me for quite some time. And the young girl realized she was gay, and by then, and she was brave and. Her mom was against her, but by the end of the movie, like, she, you know, she was out. Her mom was proud.
Yeah.
And for the first time in my life, I was like, oh, my God, I'm gay. Like, I said it out loud.
To yourself?
To myself. It was the first time. I was like, I'm gay. Oh, whoa, what? And I didn't know what to do with it. I was like, I don't have any gay friends. I've never kissed a girl. Like, it was all like, what now?
Kind yeah.
of, yeah. It was
but were
so
you
weird.
Excited or like freaked out?
Freaked out for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts? Like, I got to kiss
I was
a
like,
girl.
I got to kiss a girl. I got to see what this is all about. And it's really weird to realize you're gay without having ever even kissed
at
a
26.
Girl.
I yeah. can't imagine it.
It seems so naive what, in having, hindsight.
Did you kiss boys in the past or anybody?
I'd kissed, yeah, some
yeah.
boys.
Yeah.
And it was just like, eh, yeah, okay. I guess this is what all the fuss is about.
Yeah.
But yeah, I never kissed a girl, and I think like in maybe elementary school I had, you know, dry humped a girl once
yeah, right.
at a sleepover. That was pretty great. That was the height of my
yeah. of your sexual yeah
awakening.
Yeah.
I was like 10.
So what happens at 26? I can't.
Well, this was back when Craigslist was the place to like. Find activities and meet
what
people.
Year are we talking? How old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 37 now.
Okay, okay.
So this was like 2005.
And you've been here, what, a year?
I had moved here in 2003.
Okay.
So a couple of years, two years.
Okay.
I would go on Craigslist to find, like, that's how, when I was trying to meet friends,
yeah.
I would go on Craigslist and, like, I joined like a soccer league and a tennis league. I went to African drumming classes. I was just trying
to get
meet
engaged.
People.
What did you? How long had you been doing comedy once you got out here?
I had not started yet.
Is
I
that
started
really?
In 2005.
You started out here?
Yeah, out here.
Huh.
2005. I came out and started comedy at the same time.
But was that your intention?
No, I came out here to be a personal assistant to an actress. Long story short, I was the speaker at my college graduation, and
in
2002.
Okay.
And our commencement speaker was an actress who was from Raleigh, and she spoke. We hit it off, and through a series of events, ended up later down like that summer, she offered me a job as her assistant.
Uh huh.
In LA. I had already had plans to move to Spain for a year. Very random part of my story. I moved to Spain for a year to just, I grew up very poor, and I was like, I want to see the world, and I don't want
you decided
being
on Spain?
Poor to stop me from that. So I took out a loan, bought a ticket to Spain, and moved there for a year to teach English and
really?
Travel around Europe, yeah.
So, okay, so maybe we'll go back and come back
okay.
up to you. So you go to which college?
Peace College. It was a women's college.
No kissing?
No kissing. It was a totally missed opportunity.
What were you...
But it was a conservative women's college.
So what? There were convents
there
that
was
were...
Like, there was like one gay chick at my school, and she was like, you know, basically harassed and like left a year later.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, I can't.
I know. It seems like that would have been the jackpot of Yadam.
Well, if anything, did you feel the feelings?
Oh, for sure. Okay. For sure. I mean, I was surrounded by women constantly in like pajamas and, you know, underwear. And, I mean, it was like, oh, the temptations were everywhere. But you're just like, no, I like boys. They're so cute. Oh. I just can't wait to get a boyfriend.
I hope you talked like that to them.
I was very intense back then about my friends.
Yeah. Did you have a lot of friends over there?
Yeah, I was like, that was my thing because I didn't date. I was always the social person. I had a lot of friends, a lot of different groups of people.
So what did you study there?
Communication. There wasn't a lot. There weren't a lot of choices.
Was it just a small college?
Yeah, really small.
It's in Raleigh?
Liberal arts, yeah. Now it's co-ed.
Yeah.
But back then it was all girls.
And you just chose that because of?
I got a scholarship.
Oh, good.
I was poor.
A soccer scholarship?
I wish. No, academics.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was graduating high school, I really wasn't sure I was going to be able to go to college. Other than I didn't have money.
Just just a financial thing?
Yeah.
So, all right, so you do like 4 years there?
4 years.
Study communications.
Mm-hmm. So and I can learn to communicate.
Yeah, you don't kiss any girls.
No kissing of girls.
And then you just decide Spain.
I decided Spain. I had gone to Mexico 2 summers in a row through my school to study like the Mayan ruins and stuff like that.
Oh, that's cool.
So that was awesome. And I was like, oh, I really love Spanish. I love just, you know, meeting people who are different, you know, I was from a small town in a small college and I was like seeing the world for the first time.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to see more, you know, but I wanted to go further.
Yeah.
And I only picked Spain because they spoke Spanish. I wanted to learn Spanish. And it was in Europe.
Yeah.
And I was like, that would give me the opportunity to see
for
another
year.
Part of the world. Mm-hmm.
What city did you live in?
Sevilla.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Was it great?
It was awesome. It was awesome. And it was one of the hardest years of my life. It was the year that we went to war. And it was the year after 9/11.
Right.
So, you know, everybody was on high alert.
Right.
And Spain was one of the only countries to aid us in the war.
Right.
And so all of the Spanish people were very against it and, like, you know, went to the streets, like, every weekend to protest it. And I look very American. I sound very American. So people were not very friendly to me.
Oh, my God.
So it was a tough year. Like, I went to a school to learn Spanish, and a lot of the European kids there would challenge me on it. Like, I had to read the news, like, every day because they would challenge me constantly about American politics and
So
Bush.
Were you like that before?
Not as much. That really made me, you know, because I didn't want to be like,
I don't want
to be the stupid American that comes to Spain and, you know.
So you had to have some opinions?
I had to have opinions and read books and be on the, you know, the know of
politics. That's an interesting reason to have to, you know, get engaged.
Yeah.
It's just like, I got to defend myself against these Europeans.
I sound stupid. Yeah. I don't want to not know what I'm talking about. Because, you know, I start talking and people just assume I don't know anything.
Well, that's the problem with the accent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was able to, you know, have intelligent conversations. And the people that I came across were like, oh, Americans aren't so bad. And I was
great.
Oh, my own little victories.
Yeah.
So I did that for a year and, you know, learned some Spanish. It's all gone now.
Oh, is it? Oh,
I mean, it's 14 years ago. I mean, I have it. It comes back when I need it.
14 years ago.
And
you can understand it probably.
Or 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can understand it.
Yeah.
And I taught English, and I did get to travel all over Europe, but I ran out of money and left like a month earlier than I anticipated. And
yeah.
But I came back to the States and moved to LA to work for the actress.
You can't say who it is?
Yeah, Emily Proctor was her name.
Oh, okay.
She's CSI Miami.
Oh, okay.
The blonde on
CSI. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so she was from North Carolina, and so she's the reason I moved out here.
Were you her assistant for
I was her assistant. I was a terrible assistant. I was an awful assistant. I, like, had a couple jobs, one of the main jobs being to look after her cat.
Yeah.
And I lost her cat like 4 times.
Oh, that's the worst feeling.
But the cat would like disappear. Like he would go into a closet and it was like he was going to Narnia. I swear to God, we'd both look all over this closet and he wasn't there.
That's a big closet.
And then like 2 hours later, just come out. Walk out like... Oh, that was, you know, I just went into a time warp. I'm back.
Yeah. That was so, time traveling.
Yeah. So I did that maybe a year and a half maybe, but I sucked.
So I think it's sort of a relentless job.
Well,
depending on who the person is, obviously.
I mean, she was totally nice and, she was busy work. You know, those hour dramas, they work all the time.
Right. And did she have to sit you down and go like, look, one of those conversations?
Yeah, I was like, this is, you know, well, let's just go our separate ways. You're like, cool. Yeah. All right. Well, I also was, while I was there, I started writing part-time. I ended up being a journalist after that for 7 years. Her neighbor wrote for the LA Daily News. Like she covered events in town.
Yeah. And you've got a communications degree.
I know. I mean, I had to use that big degree.
Yeah.
And she needed help. And she, because I had met Emily through my speech at my college, I heard you can write. You want to write for me part time? I was like, sure. So then that started sort of to take precedent. And then from there, another...
You were just writing, what kind of stories?
Like, I would go to events at night and...
Uncover them? Yeah, like local events?
Like celebrity events, premieres and stuff like that. It was cool. Like, my first interview was like with Will Smith on the red carpet.
Oh, really?
It was crazy. Like,
so you like one of those people with the mic?
Yeah, I was one of the people standing on the carpet with the mic, little tape recorder.
Uh-huh.
And so that led to another part-time journalist job for a syndicated column. This woman, Marilyn Beck, she was kind of the Liz Smith of the West Coast.
Right.
They hired me. And so I started doing that. And so that kind of started overtaking my life. So I wasn't doing the assistant stuff.
Right. Covering celebrity events.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then after the assistant job ended, the company I was working part-time for was like, we want you full-time. So then I was a journalist for the next 7 years.
Celebrity journalist. Yeah. Showbiz journalist.
Yeah. It's so weird.
For how long?
Like almost 7 years.
Did you have a point of view? Like, did people know who you were?
No. I mean, the publicists all really liked me.
Would
always be like, well, you know, will you talk to my client? I mean, sure. I mean, I interviewed like Kerry Washington when no one knew who she was. Uh-huh. And Lindsay Lohan before she had blown up. And
gosh, really?
Viola Davis, I interviewed several times. Her post was like, will you please interview? I mean,
she's,
you know,
great.
She's huge.
Yeah.
So that part was cool to see, like, the trajectory of these people.
Yeah, but so you were in it, though. You were in it on that
side.
Yeah,
it was weird. Like, that was my, like, waitress job. And then I started comedy at the Groundlings at night, 2005.
That's how it starts. And this is all... So you're doing the journalist job, and you're like, I'm going to take the classes.
Well, I didn't have friends.
Wait, so what year are we at now?
2005.
And how old were you then?
25.
All right, so it's still a year away from the Lifetime movie.
Well, I think it might have happened around that same time.
So you still couldn't make friends? It can be a lonely town.
It's a lonely town. And I was from the South where, like, you meet friends in the gas station,
right?
You know, here everyone's like, don't look at me, you know, don't talk to me, like, your neighbors don't even talk.
So you're just living in an apartment.
I had one friend, and that, you know, which was my roommate. I met him through the CSI Miami show he worked on there.
Yeah.
And he needed a roommate, so I moved in with him. He became my one friend, and we were like been still best friends to this day. But I was just like, I need friends. This city's very lonely. And, you know, it was hard. There were times when I wanted to leave, and I was like, I don't know if I can do this. But
you were playing soccer and stuff?
I was playing soccer and meeting people like that. But I was like, you know what? I had done theater in college.
Right.
And I was like, but I never got to do comedy. It was always like weird plays.
Yeah.
Like,
Like what?
Oh, God, I mean, no one would have ever heard of some of these plays. And then a couple Shakespeare things. I was like, I'm not meant to do Shakespeare, though, you know?
But you did a lot of theater.
I did a lot of theater. I had a lot of stage fright then, though.
Oh, I would want to throw up. Yeah. Oh, really?
On stage, yeah.
So you decided to do the Groundlings as a social...
As a social thing. And I just immediately was like, this is... what I've been missing my whole life.
Really?
Yeah, I just knew right away. I was like, I love this more than anything.
It's wild. So what was your story with the Groundlings? Did you make it to the main stage and stuff?
I did Sunday up to Sunday Company for a year and a half.
Uh-huh.
And then the last six months where they vote on me, I got hired at Chelsea Lately. And so, I didn't end up making it in the main company. I don't know if it's because I sucked or if I got a gig.
So you were there a year and a half total?
Yeah. Well, at the Groundlings, like six or seven years, but the Sunday company part was a year and a half.
So you were just, you were in the classes?
Classes and all. Because it takes a, it's such a popular school. I don't know what it's like now, but at that point, sometimes you'd have a year in between levels.
Oh, really?
So in that year, you'd take like extra classes.
Were you working out at all? Were you doing sketch shows at UCB or anything?
No, I never did UCB. I don't know why. I started my own sketch comedy and improv group because I was like, how am I going to get better if I'm not practicing?
Right.
So we would like throw stupid improv shows in the back of like a bar in Venice.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it was.
So you just carved your own little path somehow.
Yeah. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't, you know, I didn't have an agent and manager for a very long time. And I was just like, I'm just going to try to get better at this until somebody wants to work with me.
So right around this time then, you're starting out the Groundlings, and then you have the Lifetime moment.
Yep.
So now.
Which was a very freeing moment of my life.
Relief.
It was a big relief. So it's interesting that comedy and coming out came at the same time because it was almost like I was like a new person. I was like this newfound like.
And you're excited.
Yeah, this weight was lifted off me.
You feel whole?
I felt whole. I felt like a sense of peace that I had never felt.
Huh. And is that when you started doing the stand-up?
I started stand-up in 2007 at the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
Well, so this woman, Lisa Joffrey, came to one of those sketch shows that I was doing.
In the back of a bar in Venice?
In the back of a bar. And she was like, you are a stand-up. You have a very specific point of view. Why are you not doing stand-up? And I was just like, because it seems scary and I don't know how to do it. She's like, oh, take my friend's class. Are you from Adam Barnhart? You know him?
No.
Okay. So he does a show at the Comedy Store on Sunday nights. Or used
in
to.
In the belly room?
Yeah, in the belly room. So he had a class. So I took his class.
And then you get to perform in the belly room?
Yeah. Right. So at the end of it, I performed in the belly room. And I loved it. But my, like, you know, I think I talked about hating strawberries. That was my routine. Yeah. I was like, clearly I have some work to do.
Not too personal.
Yeah.
Like, you weren't going too deep.
No, it was not. But I knew being up there, I love the feeling.
Right.
So for he said, if you want to do the music for my show every Sunday night, I'll give you 10 minutes. So as a brand new comic, I got 10 minutes.
What do you mean do the music?
Like press play. Like a DJ.
Bring people up. Like, you know, do the music when people come up.
Press play and stop. I mean, it was very simple, but I got 10 minutes
every
Sunday for the entire year of my first year of stand-up.
And in the belly room.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it started.
That's
2007.
How it started, 2007.
No kidding.
And so I would do plenty of shows in between, but having that 10 minutes every week was huge for me.
Doing mics and stuff?
Yeah. I did a lot of gay shows, too, because they would, you know... They didn't care as much about like, oh, you don't have any TV credits. It was just like, oh, you're fun. You bring people. Come to a show.
Where are the gay shows?
Like at Akbar.
Oh, okay.
Aaron Foley had a show that they do a show there. There was the M Bar. Remember that?
Yeah,
they used
to
have a bunch
the
of
M
shows
Bar. Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
They would have some shows at some of the gay bars.
And were you talking about that then? How long did it take you to start talking about?
Pretty early on, but I didn't have any dating experiences.
You had no experience.
It was more. Most of my stories are about repression, you know, repressed.
Did someone finally come up and go like, let's kiss me?
Yeah. Ah, God, it took a minute, but finally it happened. And I was like, whoa, this is, I made a good choice. Not a choice, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. Why'd I wait so long?
Yeah, what was I thinking? I mean, that for sure. If there are any regrets in life, it's that I didn't come out earlier.
I can't imagine what it's like to have your first real kiss at 26.
I mean, that was the weirdest part about my life is for a long time, I was going through dating as you would in high school.
Right.
People were like, really? Why are you like putting up with that at like 29? I'd be like, because I didn't do this at 19.
Yeah.
So I had to make a lot of mistakes later in life.
With people?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you learn.
Yeah.
And then.
But was it fun?
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. I mean, I made up for lost time.
Yeah.
And had good times, bad times, fun times.
Yeah. I just got, it must have been pretty exciting.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I could have done it younger.
Yeah.
It sucked to be like in your early 30s, you know, still making those mistakes.
Right. You know, just find new ones.
Better late than never.
Sure. I know. You know, like I imagine those mistakes are, hey, it's, you know.
Well, you just kind of like.
It's hard.
Put up with whatever. Because you're like,
yeah.
I just want love.
Right, yeah.
So I'm going to take whatever you're willing to give me.
Yeah.
That's the biggest mistake.
Oh, that's bad, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't, like, I find that there's different elements of that where you're just sort of like, oh, it's just going to be a pain to get out.
Yeah. You do feel like that. You're like, oh, I've already put this time into it, you know. It's like, I'm invested in this.
It's just going to be messy and drama. I'll just go through life half kilter.
For sure.
Yeah.
And you're just, you know, I have a weird thing where like, I never want to hurt anybody. So
yeah.
I would like, even if I knew it wasn't working, I didn't want to hurt them. So I would just be like, oh, I'll just
And how did those here. End eventually?
I mean, eventually they would just be like do so right. much crappy things where right. you're just like I gotta get out of this. Eventually I had to jump ship.
Oh good, so you learned those lessons.
I learned, but especially in the beginning it took a very long time, but as each relationship happened it would happen, the getting to the end would come sooner. I would know sooner.
It's just like I don't think I've ever talked to anybody who started learning that stuff at like 26.
Right yeah.
I mean, now you're getting married. Well, you're engaged.
I'm engaged. And, you know, it's nice. She's an adult. She's, yeah. And the nice thing about her is I never had to, like, convince her to want me or like me.
Right, yeah.
And that I felt like I was doing constantly before her.
But now, also, there's, I imagine that now the confidence around, what you do,
mm-hmm.
And the gigs and doing the stand-up. Because you're a strong stand-up, man.
Oh,
you're a killer.
Yeah.
And, like, I didn't know where it came from or how, but, I mean, your command of the stage is pretty amazing. And, you really do a great job at it.
I mean, my stand-up is an interesting thing for me. I know I should put more into it. I mean, most stand-ups are, at the Comedy Store, Laugh Factory, 5-7 days a week. I did that in the beginning for sure, but I'm at a point right now where I'm just like, I'm having a little bit of a writer's block where I'm just like,
yeah,
I don't know, like, I got to push through this.
Right, you got to go just do the short set.
Yeah, so yeah. I'm like, it's that time where I have to push through, and that's the hardest.
How many? Which hour are you on? Like, I mean, how many did you do? How many specials?
I've done 2 half hours. Mm-hmm. I was gonna do, I was working up to an hour when Netflix asked me to do the half hour, stand up, series, and I was just like, all right, I'll just go ahead and do this.
A really good half hour.
Yeah, good half hour, and I'm glad I did. It was a really cool series, and I think it was a. Like worldwide is a nice platform.
Yeah, there was like kind of like 8 or 10 of you guys.
Like 6 of us.
Yeah.
And it got, really good feedback on that. And so now I have the other half of that hour that I'm working on. And then I need, the new half hour.
Yeah.
So I do want to do an hour.
Yeah. I'm right there with you.
But God, I'm like such an awe of you guys, though. I mean, you just get up there and just like talk. You just talk and you
talk
have
it through.
Yeah, you talk it through, and I get a little like hesitant to just get up there and talk.
Well, it's not everyone's bag, you know. Yeah. What I mean, if you're a writer, you're a writer. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a talker.
Yeah, you know, I have to write everything down.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't like to get up there, and I mean, I do a lot of improv.
Right.
I talk to, like, when I'm on the road, I talk to the audience a lot.
Yeah.
But I don't just get up there with a story,
right?
Like, I don't know where this is gonna go.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
I gotta work through that, you know.
Yeah,
it's stand-up's like an evolving thing.
Oh yeah, it's like it can be terrifying, and it's like I'm trying to work out a new bit, and it's like it's just not there, and like yeah. it's just that feeling of being in the main room.
Yeah,
you know, and you're doing good, and then you're like, I gotta do the new thing.
Yeah,
and then you put it out there, and it's like it's not there yet, but like
yeah,
at least I've earned enough gravitas to be mm-hmm. like, well, that didn't work.
Yeah. And people, you know, and people love you and are so familiar with your work that yeah. they just are like, I just like being a part of this journey.
Yeah, yeah, maybe he'll get it.
I'm still working my way up to that. And, you know, it's just like, I gotta push through that fear.
It's hard.
You know?
Yeah, because like it starts to weigh on you in weird ways, yeah. you know, like, because you know you're stand-up, and you know that's what you do, and, you know, part of you is sort of like, well, maybe I don't have to do it.
Yeah.
And then, don't you get, like, squirmy if you don't go up?
Yeah, I do. I do for sure. I like, fought the I'm a stand-up for a long time. I don't know why. Maybe because I started in improv and theater.
Yeah.
That when I got to stand-up, I felt, like, a little bit of, like, am I just, like, a phony that's trying to be funny? Am I really a stand-up? Like, I kind of resisted the stand-up thing.
Identifying as a stand-up.
Yeah. And, you know, and but then I, like, was touring a lot, and I was like, I guess I'm a stand-up. I'm touring a lot. And now I'm just trying to, like, Bill Burr will be like, what is wrong with you? Just, like, you're a stand-up. Go up there and talk. Like, you're funny. And I don't know why you are not, like, just doing stand-up 24/7. But, like, he's like, why are you doing this acting stuff? You're a stand-up.
He just yelled at you for no reason?
But, like, out of love, because yeah. he's so supportive of me and has been
yeah.
from day one. And, like, I thought someone like him would hate someone like me who's
oh,
just,
really?
Like, silly and going up there, like,
yeah.
you know, I'm going to tell silly stories.
Yeah.
He's been so awesome to me and has really pushed for me to push myself.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, and he's right. Like, I need to get up there and push through that fear and just embrace that I'm a stand-up and,
yeah.
and share
yeah.
my life,
yeah.
you know?
And, yeah, because there's a lot of things it sounds like a lot of things are still happening.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's...
Life is going on.
There's plenty to talk about. You know, it's just more like my stand-ups come... It's a lot of stories, but I've not yet really dug into the darker parts of life. You
yeah.
know? I usually try to keep it pretty positive.
Right.
And pretty, like...
So there's something compelling you? You're feeling like, I gotta challenge myself.
I don't
myself.
Know. Just like... Or I thought about writing it in a... Like, I sold a TV show based on my life a couple years ago, but I know that there's a darker comedy version of it that, and maybe that's why the original one didn't go.
In your, you know it's in you?
I know it's in me. And so it's like, when is that going to come
like,
out?
Like, what elements would, in terms of, like, your experience, would you consider dark?
I mean, I guess more of, like, just childhood and growing up, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm, like, most comics had, you know, stuff in my life that was challenging, and my parents divorced at a young age, and there was a lot of drama surrounding my family.
How old were you?
I was 12, and
oh yeah,
we, you know, didn't have money. The lights would get shut off on a weekly basis, and but we were living in a big house, and I came from a good family, so no, you know, we were that lower middle class family that kind of slipped through the cracks where everyone.
Right. After the divorce?
We were, yeah. Everyone thought we were
okay,
good and, yeah. like, you know, we couldn't pay our bills. And my mom was a teacher trying to take care of three kids. And
yeah.
There, I think some, you know, depression happened for her after the divorce, which, you know, turns dark. It
sure.
gets dark. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, you sort of become the parent all of a sudden.
When you're like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
And, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, there's that part of my life that I just kind of kept to myself and haven't really ever delved into as far as comedy. And my family would go through hard times, but as a family, we'd always find the humor in it. So I have a tendency to see the funny
in darkness anyway. Yeah. Did they both stay in the same town?
Yeah, they were still in the same town.
And did they communicate?
Not a lot back then. They're good friends. Both my parents have gone through a journey.
Yeah.
You know, they, I think they both, after the divorce, kind of like were like, well, we're going to go live our lives now. Yeah. And
good luck, kids.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of. They made a lot of mistakes. And luckily, I had a grandmother who, you know, was the person who was like, you know, what are you doing? Like, come home from school. I mean, from your friend's house. And you need to, you know, do your homework.
Did she live in around too?
She luckily lived like around the corner.
Oh, and, see, that's like, that's what neighborhoods used to be.
That's the beauty of small towns. Yeah. Yeah. And she looked out for me. You know, my parents were really trying to figure out their lives. And
how young were they? Your parents? Were they like?
They were normal age. Yeah. It's not like they had kids young.
Right.
They just, my dad came from a bad home. He didn't have any parental figures. Like, he hitchhiked to school. And, I mean, you talk about a rough life. My dad had a really bad go at it. And so he didn't really learn those parental things.
Sure,
and then my mom came from an affluent family. So she didn't learn some of those life skills because everything was sort of handed to her. And then you bring these two people together.
One thing they have in common is an inability to parent.
Exactly. And but they loved us. Yeah. And, you know, they taught us the basic human decencies. And, you know, my mom did keep a roof over our head. So I never want to, like, you know, poo-poo that because I had opportunities. I went to school. I had clothes on my back. Certainly a lot of other people had it rougher than I did. But you know, you just deal with the fallout of a family falling apart. And my mom and brother really had butted heads for a long time. So it was a very hostile place to be. And so school became my outlet. And, I just kind of committed myself to like being the good student and the athlete and the funny kid so that it would like hide the you know,
that's
chaos
how you manage.
Home.
Right. Yeah. That's where you could control the situation.
Yeah. And I used humor to make friends and, you know, you just kind of, you know, you're not ready at that age to be the grown up and you're just taking on a lot at a young age.
Yeah.
And I had really good teachers that they would like, you know, I'd come to school after some like World War III fight happened that morning. And
it was mostly between your brother and your mom?
Yeah, just like a lot of chaos there. And my teacher would be like, "You need a second?" I'd be like, "Okay." And I'd go in a room and like cry for like 5 minutes and then like wipe my eyes and be like, "Okay, bye." It was like crazy. But it's just like how you deal with it as a kid. And but like I said, my grandmother was like my rock, and without her, like I don't know that I would have been as focused. And
you have to have one person in your life that just loves you unconditionally.
That's really the most important thing. And like, she got me through all that. She died when I was 18, the day after I moved to college. So I again just kind of like she had like been sick, that she had cancer, and she had said at the beginning of the summer that she was going to see me off to college.
Right.
And the doctors were like, "There's no way. She has like 3 weeks to live, but she has this like major cancer surrounding her spinal cord and her brain." And it was a skin cancer that went inside as a tumor.
Yeah.
And they said it was like excruciating. And she never once said ouch or anything. She ended up living for 3 more months. And I was going to college, and I knew I wouldn't see her again. And so I went over there, you know, she was unconscious, and I said goodbyes. And you don't know, like, if she's there or not.
Right.
I said my goodbyes, and she died the next morning. So it was, like, crazy. Like, she really did see me to college.
She wailed out.
I was like, "Good Lord." and like the doctors who studied, because she had a very interesting case, a whole team of doctors studied her, and they were like, "She should have never lived that long. Like, it defies medicine and science."
Oh my God.
And the what she had was so painful. I can't believe that she lived that long. So in my, you know, I'm like, she held on for me. Yeah, and yeah. So after that, I kind of just was like, I don't want to like disappoint her.
Yeah.
You know, right. She did this thing for me and I'm going to, you know, go out there and try to not be an asshole.
Well, you're doing great. But it is interesting that, you know, hearing about that, you know, that your basic job was to, you know, keep your shit together,
mm-hmm.
you know, for other people that were out of control
yeah.
at too young an age, and that you basically, you know, you had to stuff down all the stuff
mm-hmm.
that your ability to kind of, you know, maintain
yeah.
without expressing your own emotions.
That's probably why I was in the closet for so long.
Right,
it's
exactly.
like, I have too much shit to deal with to
right.
even...
But
let
also,
this in.
But also, you know, if you don't want to deal with something,
yeah.
you're very good at not dealing with
yeah.
it.
Yeah. I just eat a cheeseburger. Oh, God.
Go to the crying room.
Yeah. So, you know, but all that stuff, you know, makes you stronger. And I think that's why I have the work ethic I do.
No, yeah, I think that's right. I think that, you know, there a lot of times the stuff we do to just, you know, survive emotionally turns out to be if you can isolate the parts that are good.
Yeah.
You know, they all come with a little bit of bad shit. But,
yeah.
You know,
I mean, you know,
what are you gonna do?
I wouldn't change anything.
Yeah.
Now I have such a motivation. I'm like, I never want to have a house that's chaos. I want peace in
yeah.
my life. I want to be able to pay my bills. It drives me every day, you know.
And also you have you're emotionally whole.
Mm-hmm.
You
and,
know what
and
I mean?
It took a long time.
Yeah,
I had a lot
great.
Of therapy.
Yeah, you got a lot of therapy?
Yeah, I went to therapy, you know, because I was, I had those mother issues and
yeah.
family issues that were seeping into dating life, where again that sort of accepting the morsels of love from
right.
people.
Oh, right.
And
right.
I worked through it, you know.
Yeah.
Not saying I have all the answers or I'm fixed.
Yeah. Are both your folks alive? Your mom's
they
still
are.
Alive.
Yeah.
And then you get along with them.
Oh yeah, we're all very. Everybody. That's the crazy thing. Like now, because like if you had told me at like
yeah,
22,
right, right.
I'd be like, oh, my family's like I'm basically an orphan.
Right.
Like. We'll never yeah. have a unit.
Yeah.
It's all lost. Hope is lost. But my folks both kind of did a weird 180 around, I don't know, 22, 24 years old that I was.
Yeah.
where they both kind of grew up a little bit. And now, like, I call both of them and, you know, I talk to them on a regular basis.
Yeah.
They're good people. They care about me. They're good parents. And
good grandparents.
Yeah, good grandparents.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
they still like have their moments where you're just like, hey, go see your grandson.
Yeah,
like, oh yeah,
that's right.
But you know, I'm proud that we've gotten to this point.
That's
and
great.
There are times in the where I've been like, hey, remember this crazy fucking story that happened? And
yeah.
It's hard for you know, especially my mom to hear it. She's like, I you know can't believe that was. Me, I can't believe that happened.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like they were different people almost. So
of course.
Yeah, it's but and I had a lot of resentment for a long time, especially towards my mom for some reason, and Spain weirdly helped
yeah.
heal that because I for the first time in my life was like, I need my mom. I miss my mom.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're just
this
like
this chaos is bigger than her chaos.
Yeah, I'm like, "Holy crap. I cannot believe I'm saying this because before that I'm like, screw you.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
I hate you." And then she actually came with me. She drove across country with me to when I moved to LA. And I remember we were in Vegas and we were walking down the hall and like I said I always had that dynamic where I was like the mom and she was a child.
Yeah.
And I kind of snapped at her about something like you would a child.
Yeah.
And some woman was like, hey, you shouldn't talk to your mom like that. And I was like, it like, you know, hit me for the first time. I was like, oh, she is my mom. Like, I got to stop reprimanding her in this way. So it really like shifted our dynamic.
Just a passerby.
So, like, yeah, it was like, she was like, it was like this African-American security guard woman. I was just like, yes, ma'am. You're right. I mean, you know?
That was the moment.
That was the moment. I stopped being a dick and I just kind of realized you can't hold people to the past. constantly.
But also, like, when your parents are, like, emotionally immature and you have that dynamic with them, it's hard to see them as parents.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? They're just sort of like, oh, God, what the fuck?
Yeah, you want to be like, what? You were, what the fuck were you thinking?
Yeah, yeah, you had no idea.
Yeah, but now, as an adult, I'm just like, ooh, I don't know if I could be a parent. That's right. That looks hard.
I know. Yeah, my parents have mellowed, too, to a certain degree, and my mom's gotten a lot better in terms of being attentive and stuff, but she was pretty self-involved. But, like, it's still hard. Like, we get along good,
yeah,
but it's still sort of like we grew up together,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
You gave birth, right?
yeah. And we hung out, you know, I watched you go through your shit,
right?
Yeah, but it's okay, which is good.
I mean, you know, every relationship's different, and sometimes you evolve out of those chaos things, sometimes they get worse.
But when it's your family, they're always going to be there.
They'll always be there.
Something's got to happen.
Yeah.
You don't want to be shut out from them.
And I love my family. I'll tell stories occasionally to, like, you know, like my girlfriend now, or fiance. Mm-hmm. And she's like, holy shit. Like, I can't believe that happened. And I'm just, like, so far removed from it. I'm like, yeah, whatever. I mean,
right. From when you were a kid?
Yeah.
Just, like, with the fights and stuff?
My sister-in-laws have that thing, too, where they hear all of these crazy stories from our childhood, so they want to be, like, protective of us, and they're, like, very, like,
right.
Oh, I don't know how I feel about your mom or dad now, and we're just like, no, we're good. I mean, like, we're laughing about it now.
Right, because you shut it, compartmentalized it.
But it's interesting to, like, tell strangers, you know, not strangers, but people.
What was it, just, like, mostly fighting and yelling?
Just crazy, like, my mom went through, like, a crazy spell. Like, she probably should have been committed at some point.
Oh, really?
But I think, like, her meds got... She was going through a depression.
Yeah.
And I think, like, had a chemical imbalance.
Yeah.
I think the doctors put on a lot of different things that just messed everything up. So it's just, like, a lot of crazy shit happened as a result.
Well, how long of a year... How many years was that?
Like, 6 years.
Oh, wow.
Like, when I was, like, 12 till... Probably after when my grandmother, right after my granddad, she mellowed out.
Uh-huh.
And
so it's good that it leveled off. And that
I mean, I think she grew up, I think they got her meds right. I mean, she's not a crazy, she's a very smart woman.
Was it like bipolar or something?
I don't know. You know, she never got sought the help to see.
Oh,
so I don't know.
Yeah,
but she did get. I mean, she would go to a doctor and got some medicine that leveled everything out.
Oh, that's good.
And I mean, we don't have. You know, that's again. Like I'll tell her those stories now. She's like, "What?" You know, it seems like it's a different person.
Yeah, I mean, I'm old enough to have a few of those.
Mm-hmm.
Where like, oh, well, yeah, that was a bad time.
Yeah, you're just like, that happened.
Sorry.
Yeah. But you kind of probably see it as like that. That's a person that doesn't exist. Like you're looking at it from the outside.
Well, yeah. You know it existed, but you can't really. It's hard to answer for it. You know, it's hard to sort of deconstruct it. Like, you know, I know why. You know, I had certain feelings or acted certain ways.
Yeah.
And it is a matter of growing up to a certain degree and you know, realizing certain things. You know.
Yeah.
Some people have an easier go of it. If you have one good parent, it seems like, you know, you've got a better. Hold on things, you know.
And you know what? Had I not had my grandmother, I definitely wouldn't be in LA. I definitely wouldn't be doing this. I could have ended up, you know, in jail. Who knows?
Yeah,
I mean,
who knows? It's weird to think that
way. Yeah, you just have like that one steady person.
Oh, yeah, thank God.
A huge difference.
Yeah. What's your relationship with Chelsea these days?
I mean, we're good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did her show a lot
That's sort of like, the new one. But the original one is really what got you.
The original one was my
following, right?
Big break, as they say.
And you were there a lot.
Yeah.
On the panel.
I was a writer full time.
Yeah.
I started there in 2011. And, you know, before that, I could not break into I was doing, you know, the Groundlings, all that stuff.
Yeah.
I, like, you had tested for SNL a couple times.
And you tested for SNL?
Yeah, twice.
Oh, really?
Two summers in a row. 2009, 2010.
Brutal, isn't it?
Oh, it's so brutal. That was one of the most nerve-wracking things.
Just you in that studio?
Oh, yeah. Me in the studio with them behind the desk.
Yeah. Did you do Lorne meetings?
I never got to the Lorne. I knew you did the Lorne meeting.
Yeah, I had Lorne meeting.
Yeah, I did not get to that
fucked me up for years.
I bet. I tested for them twice, and then he and Kristen Wiig and a bunch of people came to a Groundlings show as well. Mm-hmm. So three times he saw me.
Yeah.
And it's just, nope. you know, I don't know what the thing was, but that wasn't happening, and I just wasn't getting a break. And then I sent a writing packet in for Chelsea's show.
Yeah.
And thank God, like, they hired me. I had a meeting with her, and I honestly think I got the job because of where I was placed in the meeting order.
Oh, really?
She doesn't like to have meetings.
Yeah.
And I think I was the first person. I'd already met the producers.
Yeah.
But I would think I was the first meeting, and she just didn't want to be there any longer. And thank God she liked me.
Yeah.
And it's like after 10 minutes of talking, she like abruptly stood up and like, just was like, I'm done.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming.
Right.
And I called my manager. I was like, I definitely didn't get that. Like, she interrupted the meeting, stopped it, and told me to get out. And the next day they said I got the job. And I was like, couldn't believe it. And that changed everything for me because I was broke. I was so broke. I didn't know how I was going to pay the bills the next month. And started there at the beginning of 2011 and stayed until 2014.
She's a good boss, right?
Yeah.
I mean, she seems pretty loyal to people.
She's very loyal. I mean, yeah, you know, I had a different experience with her than other people.
Like, yeah.
Everybody has their own experience, sure. But like...
She's not the easiest person in the world.
I mean, you know, she's who she is.
Yeah.
You know, like you see her on TV, like she's not putting on airs.
Yeah.
Like, that's her.
Yeah.
But she's like always... really good to me, like from
right.
day one. She just, I don't know, like saw something in me or took to me, and so like you know, she would give other people shit but never me. Like, she was always so cool and took me on the road, and you know, that's where my whole career started,
doing the stand-up professionally.
I mean, I had only been in stand-up 3 years when I got that job, and suddenly I was like a headliner. It was crazy.
That's tough.
It was tough. I mean, because I didn't have the material to back it up yet.
Yeah.
So I was like having to learn as I was on stage.
Yeah.
Being like, these people paid to see me. I better figure this out. And then I left the show before it ended to do a Tina Fey pilot. And I think that was hard because, you know, she really loved me. And I think, you know, wanted us to work together for a long time, but she knew I had these aspirations to be an actor. So I ended up leaving her show to do the acting.
Yeah.
But I stayed on the round table, and we stayed friends. And then she kind of took a year off. I didn't hear from her very much because she was like traveling the world, I think.
Yeah, she got a house in Spain or
something.
Yeah.
And then
or
she
Greece
started her new show and
yeah.
started having me come back on doing... like Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Yeah.
All those crazy characters. Ivanka Trump, who obviously I look nothing like. It started because Ann Coulter had backed out at the last minute. She was supposed to go on Chelsea's show and backed out. So Chelsea was like, will you come put on a blonde wig and read from her book? I was like, sure. So that's how the characters started for
her.
That's
good. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're good. I mean, she's always been good to me.
Yeah. So what you got going now, aside from struggling to conquer the fear to get the more stand-up going?
Yeah. Now, acting has kind of
taken
a
lot,
little bit of precedent over things at the moment. I finished up I was a series regular on
Mindy
for 3 seasons, and I started her. She's producing a new show called Champions. It's on NBC.
Oh, really?
It'll, I think, come out. We don't have an air date yet.
What is it?
It's Anders Holm is the main guy in it. He and Mindy's character have a kid together, but he just found out about it. And the kid's a young gay kid who wants to come to New York to be in an art school. And Anders' character owns a gym. So it's called Champions. The gym is Champions, and so he has to suddenly, like, she's like, here's our kid. The only way he can go to the school is if he lives with you. So suddenly he's like this, you know, single bro-ish dude who's having to care for this like 15-year-old gay kid
yeah.
while running this boxing gym.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I play one of the his best friend and one of the trainers at the gym, obviously. Uh-huh.
Oh, that's great. This sounds like a big part. You shoot the pilot already?
Yeah, we're like on, I think on episode like 5 right now.
Oh, you're really in it.
Yeah, so it'll, I think, come out sometime in spring or late spring, early summer.
Oh, that's great.
So yeah, we'll see. But you know, that whole group is, Mindy and her whole team, they're so good to me. So I was happy to keep working with them.
Nice. It sounds like everything's good.
It's not bad. I sold a movie to Steven Spielberg. I'm hoping.
What?
Well, I don't know. We'll find out what happens with that.
He wrote a movie and he sold it to Steven Spielberg?
His company, yeah. Amblin.
Yeah. What's that about?
It's called Bad Cop, Bad Cop. Just about
Bad Cop, Bad Cop?
Bad Cop, Bad Cop.
Yeah.
Two rookie cops, female cops, yeah. who really suck at their job,
uh-huh.
who are kind of like... just in charge of errands,
uh-huh.
get blackmailed into doing the dirty work for another, like a lieutenant who's like a bad cop.
So it's a comedy, though?
It's a comedy.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a Comedic Training Day where like we're going to do all this crazy shit.
That's great.
Yeah, so we'll see that it's in the rewrite stages right now, and you know,
busy.
We'll find out if that goes. I mean, you know, getting anything made these days is not easy.
Well, yeah, but like you know, being employed isn't either. So
that's true.
It sounds like you got a lot going on.
Well, it's been good. I'm just happy that.
Well, don't give
I
up
can
the
pay
stand-up.
My bills.
Yeah, Bill's right.
I will not give up. I don't want to make Bill upset.
Yeah, so you stay on it.
I'm going to start writing again.
All right, good. It was great talking to you.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
That was a great talk. And as I said before the talk, Fortune Feimster will be at the House of Comedy in Phoenix, Arizona this Friday, January 12th. All right. Yeah, he's... I'm drowning.
I'm gonna play.